1108, make it 1109. Welcome back to McGraw Show, Big 550 KTRS. Every Monday we check in with Dick Weiss, our media critic. Lots of things in the news, as always. Longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He has a website, weisswrite.com. Dick, welcome back to Big 550 KTRS.
Good to be here.
Good to be here as well. A lot of things to talk about, including, did you see where, I probably shouldn't throw this to you on the air, but you know, a lot of people talk about the liberal versus conservative war versus all that. Do you know that the 118th journalist just died covering the war in Iraq?
Is that right?
118th.
Is that worldwide?
Worldwide.
American?
Yeah, yeah, no, no.
Okay,
worldwide. It was a Washington Post reporter, and it brings the total. It's in the Washington Post today. At least 118 journalists have been killed in Iraq while on duty. Nearly 100 of them were Iraqis.
Ugh. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, say what you want. You know, criticize the media all you want, but 118 of us have gone and risked our lives trying to bring people the story.
You know, a number of people from the Post-Dispatch have gone, and I was talking or emailing with Phil O'Connor, talking to him about a series about the young men at Fort Leonard Wood that he followed. It was for a week-long series, and he is trying to make up his mind whether to go with them to Iraq and whether it's worth the risk, frankly, to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Let's start off with your buddy Al Gore.
Wins
the Nobel Prize.
Nobel Prize.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
You're a very smart man. You can answer this question for me. Did he win it? Because he wasn't a producer on the movie. He didn't write the movie. He didn't create the movie. He voiced the movie. They handed him a script, and he voiced it.
He was the proselytizer.
Right. This would be like giving Jack Lemmon a Nobel Peace Prize for the China Syndrome.
Oh, kind of like doing the voiceover?
Right, yeah. I mean, he was an actor in it.
I guess, but I think if he had not lent his soapbox and his name and his interest to it, that... it wouldn't have gotten the legs that it did and the attention that it did. So I wouldn't begrudge him the Nobel Prize. I don't think it makes him the next president of the United States. I think the Nobel Prize has been given to some people who, at least in hindsight, did not turn out so well.
Right.
Yasser Arafat,
right.
To name one. And I think some people had some issues with Lee Duck Tho, Vietnam, and so on. But... I think he did a good thing. I think he's had a great post vice presidency.
Yes, no question about it. But and now that he wins the Nobel Prize, people say that that's going to rekindle interest to him to run for president. I don't necessarily. I agree with you. I don't see one being a result of the other.
Right. And what I regretted was that the media paid so much attention to that and his possibility of running for president, which is incredibly slim because the Democratic Party seems to be pretty happy with the candidates that they have.
Right.
Rather than focusing on what it was he won the prize for and whether those issues will continue to resonate and, frankly, whether what he was saying, what he was pitching was true.
Right. So he won it for his overall push towards getting global warming more on the mainstream.
Right. And he wasn't a Johnny-come-lately to this thing.
No.
Even before he was running for president and vice president, he was interested in these issues. So.
Right.
And mercilessly teased about them.
Right. Have you been paying attention to this Graham Frost debate?
Been trying to. In fact, if the Post-Dispatch readers will find Paul Krugman's column, which appeared last week in the New York Times, in today's Post-Dispatch, talking about this issue.
This is the 12-year-old boy who wants the Republicans, let me make sure I get my facts right, the Republicans don't want this new money for the S-CHIP program and an expansion in $35, $40 billion, whatever it is. So they wanted to vote it down. The Democrats want it. And so the Democrats put up a 12-year-old boy who was in a car accident and was brought back to life and was resuscitated because of the help of this S-CHIP health insurance program.
Right.
Since then, he has been, depends on where you sit. It's either been a questionable spokesperson or he's been vilified.
Yes, I hear that the Democratic Party is going to have a puppy give the response next time. Nothing wrong with using real-life examples to make a point. And nothing wrong with one side looking in to whether that example really holds up.
Right.
I think what's happened is that when the reporting was done on Graham's family, Graham Frost's family, it became distorted, and really on both sides. Because you read Paul Krugman's column, he says that the Frost family has been slimed, and the Frost, for instance, the right wing will tell you that the Frost send their kids to private schools, so how poor can they be? Well, as it turns out, that the kids went on scholarships. Well, the Frosts live in a house that's worth $300,000. Well, that may be true today, but they bought it when it was a bad neighborhood, and it was $55,000. And so that gets a little bit distorted, but if you read Paul Krugman's column, he would tell you that he was really castigating one commentator in particular, Michelle Malkin. But then he says basically the right wing has been spreading these lies about the Frost family or these distortions. When you read Malkin's column, she is a little bit more, detailed than Paul Krugman gives her credit for. She says that they go to private school, the kids go to private school, she says, and that some of them, the kids were, did have, maybe had some scholarships. We don't know that. She admitted what she didn't know.
Right.
And so her column was a little bit more responsible than Paul Krugman gives her credit for. So you go back and forth, and to be a really intelligent newspaper reader, you have to, or media reader, you really have to drill down and see who's saying what about whom. Yeah, it's quite possible, quite likely, in fact, that many right-wing commentators did not share the nuances that Michelle Malkin did.
But if the Democrats are going to put up somebody, and they're also being vilified because, hey, the kid's 12, leave him alone.
Right.
If the 12-year-old kid is going to throw his hat into the debate over whether this new federal health insurance program should be funded to the tune of $35 billion or not, if a 12-year-old is going to throw his hat to the ring and the Democrats are going to put him up on a pedestal, mm-hmm. then unfortunately you're opening yourself up to some scrutiny.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I'm sure that Graham got a great lesson, and his family did as well. His family probably went into it, I'm sure, with their eyes wide open. They knew that something like this would happen. And but what tends to happen is that there's so much attention is paid to this that they don't really look at what's the issue behind it. And that is health care for children, and should they have it? And it's a travesty in this nation that so many children do not. And the issue is, you know, how far should you go in terms of people who are in the middle class and giving them benefits?
You're absolutely right, because the issue isn't, is this 12-year-old really going to a private school or a public school, but this family that is makes, what, $55,000, $65,000 a year can't afford health insurance.
And there are a lot of, that's where the Republicans are going to lose on this issue, I think, at least in terms of the popular will. Because there are a lot of people in that boat, and they vote, and kids need health care.
Yeah, and he's also a self-employed woodworker too, I believe.
Yeah,
which I always vote for the woodworker.
Yeah, he would be. You could identify with him.
Yeah, right, right. Well, he probably has a little more skill than I have. But, but anyway, I just thought it was interesting. You know, but anytime, you know, it's like the 9/11 wives who come out and stand up and say something. Look, I'm sorry for your loss, and I feel for you. But if you're getting up and making a political statement as a 9/11 wife, you certainly have.
You'll be open to scrutiny.
We have the right to criticize you because we disagree.
But the scrutinizers should be decent about it when they do that.
Well, but they're
bring
not,
out the information.
They're not decent for anybody else.
Right.
So, I mean,
that's true.
There is no common decency in public discourse these days. Lynn Cheney shows up on Jon Stewart's show.
Oh, yes. I was so disappointed in Jon Stewart. Stewart is a terrific interviewer. He's a very funny man. And he set up the interview with Lynn Cheney, Dick Cheney's wife, who has come out with a new book that is a very sunshiny kind of
right. She was on
about
the morning
growing
show.
Up in Wyoming.
She was on the morning show with Vic and Katie this morning.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Stewart is often asked some really tough questions of people he disagrees with. Can think of John McCain, who has a friendly relationship with, but he asked him some very tough questions about Iraq.
Right.
Well, he just rolled over for Lynch. It was as if Lynn Cheney was his former first grade teacher, and he didn't want to do or say anything that would disappoint, make her feel disappointed in him.
Yeah, this is the interview where she says, we haven't had a terrorist attack since 9/11.
Yeah.
And he says, well, what about the Bali, and what about this? And she says, well, not on the shores of America.
Yeah. And he couldn't go anywhere with that. He had no rejoinder for that. He had no, you know, even their daughter,
Mary Cheney,
a lesbian, and you know, that whole issue and the hypocrisy that's inherent with that in the Republican Party. He didn't do very much with that, and he was just a wuss. And he was the lead up to the thing was that indicated it was like a foreshadowing that he was going to be a wuss, because he has a shtick that he does from time to time.
Radio, whatever, or as a newspaper person, and you agree to not ask a certain question, do you have to disclose that to your readers and or listeners? Or
yeah, I think you should.
Right.
But I also think you probably 99.9% of the time should not agree to those kinds of strictures.
Right.
Because it's I just don't think that's healthy. Now, you also are, I think you should be confined by the bounds of good taste. At some point, it's probably not appropriate anymore to ask Teddy Kennedy about driving off the bridge with Mary Cho Kopechne 40 years ago.
Sure.
But it might resurface as being relevant for one reason or another.
Right.
So I guess that's where I am on. I think full disclosure is always a good
idea. I agree totally. You know, I have, on the few occasions I agreed to stipulate before I interviewed O.J. Simpson, mm-hmm. that the prerequisite was I was not allowed to ask about the murders. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, great. And my first question was...
what about these murders?
No. I said, I agreed to that. Mm-hmm. And my first question was, Mr. O.J. Simpson, we have agreed not to to ask you. You put a stipulation on this interview, and we have agreed not to ask you about the murders. Mm-hmm. Why are we not allowed to ask you about the murders?
That's a good way.
And then he opened the door, and we talked about it for the next...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I have turned down some pretty prominent people because, you know... don't ask me about the most important thing or the one thing that I'm famous for. Well, what are you talking about? That's why I want to talk to you.
Yeah, so what are you supposed
to
ask him about? The Rose Bowl?
Right.
You were outstanding in the 1968 Rose Bowl.
Right. Right.
That doesn't make any sense. You've heard of interviewers, though, who make the agreement, and then they go on the air, and they ask them that question.
Right, well, that's...
They agreed not to ask.
Well, that's
sandbagging the guy. And then
the
person stalks off. And he looks bad, or she looks bad.
Right.
It'd
be like Colin Powell coming on the show. Don't ask him about the war. What do you mean, don't ask him about the war? He's the reason why we're there. We can't ask him about the war. So, what's the best story we've never read?
Well, there was a... I did not know this, but apparently the U.S. government had some kind of policies that made it attractive or encouraged adoptions that take place of Native American children, that they were encouraged that the adoptions take place off the reservation. In other words, white people were encouraged to take Native American babies from unwed mothers and to raise them outside the reservation.
And this was a government program?
Yeah, this is a government program sort of encouraged that.
Okay.
And so a lot of Native American children were raised off the reservation and this program ended about 20 years ago, but a lot of children were told by their adoptive parents, you have, quote, some Indian blood in you, and it made it kind of intriguing for these children. They had no idea, you know, where they got this Indian blood from, so they were curious. What also happened was on the reservations around the country, they felt as if children had been taken from them,
right.
Their heritage, their legacy. And so one Indian reservation in Minnesota made it a point to try to find these children and to get in touch with them. And, of course, there's a lot of privacy issues involved. But some children were contacted. And they had, in Minnesota, the Minneapolis Tribune did a story about a homecoming for the children of Native Americans who came back to the reservation. And, unfortunately, in some cases, by then, their biological parents were dead or gone or whatever, but they reconnected. It's a very moving story, and also comes with a an audio slideshow that with a ceremony, and you can find it. A link to that story on Weisreit.com, and read all about it.
And it was originally published in the Minneapolis Tribune.
Minneapolis Star Tribune, yes.
All right, that's Dick Weiss. His website, Weisreit.com, 30-year editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, 20 years with the Metro section. He's with us every Monday. He's our media critic, and he tries to keep us honest as best he can. Dick Weiss, always a pleasure, my friend.